It's Wednesday, which means it's time for another episode of The Stacks with me, Tracy Thomas. This week, we've got actor, producer, and activist Behzad Dabu as our guest. There is so much awesome stuff going on here at The Stacks. We've got great guests, exciting books for the book club, and the launch of the Short Stacks episodes. And there's more end-of-year fun coming your way. I want to say a special thank you to The Stacks Pack, who make all of this possible. They're our most devoted listeners who contribute to this show through Patreon. To be a part of the Stacks Pack and the creation of this show, to get inside access, early announcements about guests, and to join our virtual book club, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Our newest member of the Stacks Pack is Ardina Bull. Thank you so much, Ardina. And for the rest of you, make sure you check out patreon.com/thestacks to join the fun. If a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can also do one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. To make sure you never miss a thing, follow us on social media and check out our website. You can find links to all of that in the show notes. Also in the show notes are links to everything we talk about on today's episode. If you use those links to shop on Amazon, you're helping the Stacks and it comes at no cost to you. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible is an online database of audiobooks. They have an insanely large collection, so you're definitely going to find something that you love. You can get a free trial for 30 days and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Also, check out our friends at My Mentor Book Club. They're a monthly subscription box of 2 nonfiction new releases each month. The books come to your door with free shipping, and listeners of this show get your first month for 50% off. So go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. Are you subscribed to this show? Great. Have you told all your friends? Amazing. Have you given the show a review on iTunes? No. What are you waiting for? It's so easy. Honestly, it takes you like 30 seconds. You can write whatever you want, hopefully nice things, but really whatever you want. And it helps the show so much. It helps us reach out to new listeners, to get on the iTunes charts, which we were number 6 last week on the iTunes charts and literature, thanks to you guys. So keep spreading the word about the show and make sure if you haven't yet that you leave us a review. All right, y'all, it is time. I am joined today by actor, producer, activist, and basketball enthusiast and historian, Behzad Dabu. Behzad is most well known for his roles on How to Get Away with Murder and the Showtime series, The Chi. Okay, let's do it. All right, welcome to The Stacks. I am here today with our guest, Behzad Dabu. Behzad is an actor, producer, and activist. You most likely know him for his work on How to Get Away with Murder and The Chi. Behzad, welcome to The Stacks.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. Tell me a little, or tell us a little bit about yourself. I gave you like a very professional line there.
I grew up in upstate New York.
Okay.
And I went to Chicago for school, where I stayed and like made my life. I sort of say like I'm a Chicago actor. I became an actor and a human and an adult in Chicago, where I did a lot of theater. And I started I started to really get involved in professional theater productions in Chicago and really became a member of the community there. And through doing that, started doing audience facilitation and post-show discussion work, which kind of led me to activism. And I'm a founding member of a group called the Chicago Inclusion Project, which seeks to level the playing field for women and people of color and LGBTQ populations in the arts. And since then, I did a play called Disgraced, which took me around the country, ended up in LA, and now I'm here and I stayed.
Amazing. You basically just gave us the entire layout for the first few minutes of the podcast, because we're going to go through all those things.
Great.
Let's start with your activism work, because
yeah.
I think that's exciting, and I don't think people always know that actors do other shit.
Yeah.
So the Chicago Inclusion Project is, you said it, but it's an artist, it's an advocate for artists of color, women, LGBTQ,
and people disabled. With disabilities. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like we want to provide it. We want to be a resource. We hear a lot of times when we are asking for representation or opportunity that people in power often say, well, where are they? Well,
sure.
Where do we go? Well, what do we do? What did we do wrong? We didn't know. And it's like, well, let me be the resource. And it's certainly not just me. It's actually a woman named MJoy Gavino is the real soul and sort of inspiration for that group. And she's the leader now, especially now that I'm gone. She had this idea of like, we don't need to have any excuse for anybody who doesn't want to do it. If they want to do it, here we go. We got the people. We know the resources. We can tell you what you did right, what you did wrong. We can help you. We can help solve these problems. Sometimes that means calling out things that are racist. Okay. Or sometimes it means calling in and being like, hey, look at this awesome. Look who's doing it right. And this got is it. Great. And sort of like amplifying those messages so that people have an impetus to do it.
And is it for predominantly like film and TV acting, or is it for all artists? Like if I was a visual artist or a singer or mm-hmm. something.
It's for all artists. To be honest, most of our work has been involved in the theater in Chicago.
Okay.
Because that's where we are involved. But we have spread it. I've been working recently with someone in Sarasota. I've been working a lot in LA with doing a lot of, most of this is myself, but doing a lot of like audience facilitation, post-show discussion. We go watch a play. Do you think the play sort of sends a certain message? Well, let's talk about that and see where your inherent biases are making you create that message.
Interesting.
And we can sort of have discussions like that. I just did one in LA about gun violence in the Black community. We can do it in, we can talk about Islam. We can talk about representations of brown people on screen. We can talk about lots of things. And so we sort of just amplify those types of messages.
That's so awesome. And do you do other activist stuff?
I work heavy with Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
I work heavy with the Reform LA Jails movement, which is actually doing really well. It's about sort of trying to force the city to use their funds in different ways rather than creating larger jails. So right now, Los Angeles County is actually home to the most jails in the world.
That's nice.
Most prisoners in the world, sorry. That's crazy. Yeah. Like that should not be the case. And they want to build a $3 billion new prison.
Where?
In Los Angeles County. And it's crazy because it's our tax money and we haven't even approved
it. About it.
Yeah.
So like, wait, this is news to me.
We got a bunch of signatures.
Got it.
And the Reform LA Jails through White People for Black Lives and in partnership with Black Lives Matter, we've gotten 200-something thousand signatures so that now it'll be on the ballot. And then the election just happened and they voted to talk about it. So now the 2020 election will actually really...
So it'll be like a prop on 2020?
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh my God, so exciting.
So yeah, that's really great.
That's very cool. So you're an actor, which we know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really... I mean, I want to talk to you about acting, but I kind of don't really need to talk about How to Get Away with Murder that much or The Chi, because I feel like those are famous things. What I do want to ask, though, and it'll be the only one about this, is Shonda, Lena, Viola, like, are you just dead every time you go to work? Is that the greatest thing that's in the world?
Yeah. Viola, for sure. Viola is, I've actually like worked with Viola a lot and have a lot of connect there. And she, there's something like special about her.
Sure.
And what I mean is that there's like certain people that you're like, there's like an aura, there's a spirit, there's an energy, there's a specialness. And it just like emanates from her that they're specialness. And then I sometimes like do have that thought of like, when you go online and you see everybody you know is talking about Viola Davis, like she makes a quote, everybody posts it. Mm-hmm. You know, she wears a dress to the Oscars, everyone loves it, you know? And then sometimes I go, I know her.
I know
her. Like I can text her. Like
dress.
I can email her, you know? I don't, but I could. You know what I mean? And we're not like besties, obviously, but like just I have a connection there and I sometimes feel special, but then I'm like, of course everybody's talking about her because if you meet her, you get it. You're like, oh, you have it. You have there's a guy named Lorca, Francisco Garcia Lorca. Mm-hmm. He's a playwright and he talked about something called Duende.
I know Duende.
Yeah.
Do you know that I went to theater school and I had to do a whole paper on Duende my freshman year of college?
I did not know
It's basically like the figure eight. Right, yeah, like it's like the movement of like
it's a
flow,
it's
a vibe.
it's what we call today swag.
Yes,
but he describes it sort of in men that like certain men have a duende and that women would be attracted to that duende. Mm-hmm. But I think that can go for all people, all genders. Sure. And Viola Davis definitely has duende.
But she also, this is what I'll say, and I love to hear that like she's like got that vibe, because not only does she have that, but she's also really fucking talented.
Oh, incredibly talented.
Because there are
talented
people who have all the swag in the world who are like, you see them in a movie and you're like, She's still not that good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. She's got talent, grace, intelligence, yeah. compassion.
She's all the whole of it.
She's
whole
got
thing.
The whole thing, but it's special. It's something different.
Right.
It's like, it's not what I've seen. And to be honest with Shonda, mm-hmm. I hate to like burst this bubble. I've actually never met her.
Oh, really? Because yeah. she's not your show. She's not the showrunner.
Correct. She works heavily on Grey's Anatomy. I know she, and I'm not trying to understate her involvement in How to Get a Murder. I'm sure she is heavily involved.
Right. But she's as just far not as, like, there day to day.
Exactly. On the day to day,
you can only be one place
exactly.
at a time.
I don't see her. And then Lena is an inspiration to me, sort of from afar. She actually went to the same college I did, but okay. in different years. We didn't know each other much. We've met a few times on set, and she's mm-hmm. great. But another person who my day to day interactions okay. isn't heavy with Lena. But I follow Lena heavy on mm-hmm. social media, yeah. and I follow Lena's career heavy. Right. I could probably like list off her resume right now. So Lena's an inspiration to me.
Lena's
going to
find
hustle.
Out you're a fanboy. Like, yeah. Because you know Lena loves the stacks, obviously. Who doesn't?
I have a friend who says that in Hollywood there are workhorses and there are show ponies.
Okay.
And Lena's both.
Okay, got it.
Lena's like, show ponies are the ones who are able to like go on Kimmel and be
right,
charming and,
right.
and go on Ellen and like sell their thing,
right.
but also like work really hard. And right. that's Lena.
That's awesome. I yeah. love to hear that. I think it's cool that like of all the things you could be doing in Hollywood, there's so much stuff that's crap. And I feel like it's neat that your work with like the Chicago Inclusion Project is connected. Like you're working on shows run by women. You're working with powerful women, women of color, men of color, like yeah. inclusive shows. I mean, on How to Get Away with Murder, your character, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but he's gay. Is that a spoiler?
He becomes gay. Yeah.
Well, he becomes out of the yeah, closet. So yeah, that's why I wasn't sure.
Comes out of the closet, yeah.
So, but like, that's all kind of the work
yeah.
that
well,
you
I mean,
do.
Yeah. Because it's the type of things that I attract.
Right.
So like I turn down the crap.
Okay.
So then like, there is nothing left.
Right.
But
that's
the
true.
Good stuff. You know, I turned down the crap. And
what a luxury to turn down shit, huh?
You have
so
to.
So great.
You have to. I didn't in the beginning of my career.
Right.
There's things in my career I'd love to scrap.
Yeah, that you're like, I wish nobody would ever know about this.
Yeah.
I'm so sad someone saw this.
I've called IMDb a couple times to scrub some things.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
But I it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, yeah, I might do some crap for something that's massive. But
right.
But for some of the things, it's like, for what?
For
I'm
going
to do this for what day to like, to what detriment to my dignity, to what detriment to my people, to what detriment
right.
to like my family.
Right.
To see something that puts no good into the world. I actually believe that like we as actors, it's a service profession. And I actually believe that we are sort of avatars or catalysts to go through an experience. A character goes through an experience so that we don't have to.
Right.
Same thing in a book. We read a book so that we can learn about what the characters are going through so that we don't have to go through that same thing.
Right.
We can learn that lesson. So if I'm going off on tangents, but this is the real thing, is that the majority of people in America don't meet people that aren't like them.
Sure.
The majority of people in America and the majority of white people in America don't have a non-white friend. And that's
right.
like the truth. And so if now the only representation they're going to see of a person that looks like me is on TV, and there are 2,200 series regulars last year, and 22 of them were people that look like me. 22 of them were Middle Eastern or North African or South Asian.
That's crazy.
So that's 1%. And then 70% of the time, so like 14 of those 22 people were threats. So now you see 22 people of color, or sorry, 22 people that non-black people of color, and 14 of them are bad guys, then that's what they are. Then that's
right.
what you know. Then that's what it is.
Right.
And so I'm really trying to change that narrative.
You don't want to be a bad guy.
Or a bad guy for no reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
or a bad
is?
Guy that's not going to get you like an Oscar. Like you could
yeah.
do Training Day. Like if that's what you had to do to get your Oscar,
yeah.
like you'd do it.
But also like, you know what's amazing about Training Day? Like it's a perfect example. He's not a bad guy because he's black.
Right.
He's a bad guy because he's a bad guy.
Sure. But I wonder if that distinction people make when they're watching the film,
mm-hmm.
who aren't exposed to a lot of black or brown people.
Yeah, I wonder
like
that too.
It's a distinction that you and I can make as people of color.
Right.
But I wonder if you're not,
yeah.
you just think, of course, he's a bad guy.
I played some bad guys. Like I did a show called Blood and Gifts
okay.
where I played a warlord. I played an Afghan warlord. But what I loved about that role so much is you actually get to see, a lot of times you see, bad guy, he speaks Arabic.
Right.
Bad guy, gun, hates America.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
And this one, like you see that you see the American troops come and take his land. You see them kill his father. You see him loving Western culture and
right.
Western music and then like feeling betrayed. You see like what twists with him. I did
right.
a show called Disgraced that I worked on the original production of. And with Disgraced, at a certain point, you see domestic violence where a brown man hits his white wife. And a lot of people would say, like, look at that Muslim dude hitting his wife. And I was like, there's a lot of labels in this play.
Right.
He's a lawyer. He's wealthy. He's a New Yorker. He's a man. He's an American. You just said, look at that Muslim dude. Why didn't you say, look at that lawyer beat his wife? Look at that Knicks fan beat his wife. Look at that rich guy beat his wife. Look at that man beat his wife.
Right.
You put a certain label on it. It's just interesting.
That kind of stuff always, I'm always interested. Because you said in Training Day, he's not a bad guy because he's black. But I wonder if anyone's a bad guy because they're black or Muslim, right?
In movies, they're portrayed as that, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I see what you're saying, how they're
portrayed. In real life, no.
Right. I was thinking, like, I'm like, in life, like, I don't know. I do bad things, but I don't know if any of them are because I'm black necessarily. No, I mean, I guess there probably are some things that I do that are because of that. But
it's an interesting
thought that as an actor, you have that responsibility to, if you have made it to a certain level, that you have the responsibility to turn down things that aren't.
Totally.
I mean, I guess not every actor, that's a choice that you've made. Mm-hmm. And I think that's commendable.
Because a lot of times it'll be, you know, Bradley Cooper is the hero. And then there's like a whole bunch of bad guys who are like, we're only bad because we go, Allah, blah, and then we're bad.
Right.
And it's like, well, I don't mind playing a bad guy, but show me why he's bad. What did you do to hurt him?
Right.
What happened?
Right.
Like,
right.
Why is he angry?
Right. Sure. Because there are bad guys.
Yeah. There's bad guys.
Nicki Minaj would say, everyone needs a bad guy. And Chun-Li, which is also a whole other story about race. But I really like the song, so Chun-Li.
Okay, cool.
So you're also a trained theater actor.
Yeah.
And I went to theater school, and I love the theater.
Where'd you go?
I went to NYU.
Cool.
And I studied theater, and I love plays. And we talk a ton about books on this show.
Yeah.
But it's very rare that we get to talk about plays.
Yeah.
And I know that you do work with new plays and that sort of stuff. But I kind of want to talk about some, like, great plays that you either love or characters you love that you've read, like things that, because a lot of plays don't always work on the page.
Uh-huh. I read a lot of plays.
Yeah. Like, I don't, have you ever seen or read Pillow Man?
Yeah.
I saw it and I read it.
Saw the original production.
Me too. Mm-hmm. But on the stage, it's like the most magical thing. And on the page, I don't know if I would recommend it to someone. So I don't know if you can think of any plays that you really love that are great on the page for people who are interested in that kind of reading.
I think the most beautiful play I've read in years is actually a guy who lives in Los Angeles. His name's Rajiv Joseph.
Okay.
His most famous play was a play starring Robin Williams on Broadway called Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo.
I saw that original.
Yeah. I actually don't like that play.
I did not like it. But I did like, there's like a gold toilet.
Yeah. I actually really, it's so funny. I think Rajiv Joseph is one of our best writers living. And I think that's his worst play, even though it's his like most famous play.
That's interesting.
I think it's his worst play.
That happens
a lot. It happens on Eminem albums all the time. Like the one hit they'll put on the radio is the
worst song.
And then, okay. But there's a play he wrote. It's not his most recent play, but it is a recent play. It's called Guards at the Taj.
Okay.
It's the most beautiful play. I think in 50 years people will be studying that play.
Okay.
If Rajiv Joseph is listening, I hope you listened past where I said I didn't like Bengal Tiger, because Guards at the Taj is so incredible.
I'll just send him a message being like, keep listening to this part.
Guards at the Taj, it's so incredible. It's so beautiful. It's about beauty and art and the meaning of our duty, like the meaning of our jobs. And I'll give you a synopsis. It's about, it's two guys. And they are guards at the Taj. They are guarding the Taj while the Taj Mahal is being built.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it's sort of this weird, they talk kind of like today. They they say things like gonna and what's up. But they're obviously in like the 1500s or whenever the Taj Mahal is being built. And they're guarding it. And their only job is that they cannot turn around to look at it. Because if they take their eyes off the target, someone might sneak in and do something.
Because it's so beautiful to like take their breath away kind of thing.
Yeah, and they'll be distracted. So they have to like, their job is to stare forward. That's their job. But everyone is like, they're looking at people looking at it. And they're seeing, everyone's like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. But they're not allowed to see it. It asks you this question about your job. Like, what is your piece in the machine? Like, what is your cog? Like, what is your job? And then, of course, what is beauty? Like, I don't want to spoil the rest of the play, but it's so gorgeous. Okay. And it's quick. And everyone, I think if you're a reader, you'll love it.
Okay. I'm going to put this in the show notes. I put everything in the show notes. I'll put Bayzod's social. I'll put all that shit there. Okay. But we'll put this play, so don't worry. You can find it. What about a play that you've been in, like a role that you've loved in the theater?
Yeah. I worked the original. I created the original character of Abe in Disgrace. It went on.
Who
to win,
wrote Disgrace?
Ayad Akhtar.
Okay.
And Ayad Akhtar, that play
won
the Pulitzer. Okay. And then Ayad also has a novel, which was on Oprah's Book Club, New York Times bestseller list, called American Dervish,
okay,
which is fantastic. He also has other plays, The Who and the What, Junk. He's got a play called Invisible Hand, which is brilliant. So he's got a lot of great plays. But Disgraced was an experience. I've done that play hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times all over the country. I've had discussions after every single performance of it with crowds from 20 to 800 all over the country.
Wow.
And then I think it's a perfect play. I think every line in the play, from the first line to the last line, is necessary. I don't think there's one line I would cut from this final version.
Sure.
the final version that has been cut. I think it's perfect. I think it's a brilliant piece of writing. And I think it's just like exquisite.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to put that on too.
That would be difficult to read.
Okay.
I mean, it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be. But
to see it with great actors. Yeah.
That's something
that's tricky about plays sometimes, is you could have a really great play,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't read because it's not supposed to be read.
Yeah, and Shakespeare's day, they used to say, we're going to go hear a play.
Right. I love Shakespeare, and I read a lot of Shakespeare. I actually am doing a challenge where I'm reading every single one a month.
Woof.
So it'll be 37 months.
Let me know when you get to like Winter's Tale and Cymbeline.
I love Winter's Tale. I'm in the beginning right now, so it's actually a lot of stuff that I don't love, like Comedy of Errors and like Taming of the Shrew. I'm bored. But I did just get to read Richard III, which I love, so that was fun for me.
Yeah, that's House of Cards.
That is.
Yeah, Richard III is House of Cards.
That is. I never even thought about it like that.
House of Cards, the British version, literally just took Richard III.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of those plays don't translate. Mm-hmm. When you're reading them, like I have Correct. To read them out loud to myself.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of plays are like that, where mm-hmm. you can't imagine it or get a feeling for it because you're not in a room with other people and you're not experiencing it. But that is the magic of the theater to me.
August Osage County too is so brilliant.
Oh my God. Yeah. I saw the original, or I saw the one on Broadway, not this Chicago.
I saw Chicago.
And it was so amazing. And then the movie came out and I liked it because I liked the play so much. But my husband was like, this is weird and bad. And I was like, no, it's not weird and bad. It's really great. It's the second act. Like there's, you know, but that's the magic of
nearly the experience I had in the theater when I saw the movie.
No, it's nothing like it.
Yeah.
But that's the theater. I saw Meryl Streep and Mother Courage at the park in mm-hmm. New York, the park, you know, the central one. Mm-hmm. And it was raining and she changed the whole blocking and stomped through the mud. And mm-hmm. I saw that and no one else did.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theater. I was there that night.
Yeah.
So I think that's always cool about the theater. But let me ask you what's next for you if you can. Is there anything coming that we should be excited about?
I'm doing a lot of producing.
Cool.
I've been producing, I've been a part of a producing team of shows on Broadway.
Nice.
But I'm trying to do more producing of my own stuff. I'm trying to create my own content. I'm trying to tell stories, like the things I want to see on screen, instead of like talking about it and asking other people to do it. I'm trying to like just do it myself, which is really hard. And there's a lot of barricades and fires to put out every day. But I am working on creating my own stuff. I'm working on producing the work of my friends that I admire. I'm trying to just like be a creator rather than like relying on being a cog in the machine.
Sure. That's awesome. The last thing we'll talk about before we dive into, I know this is going to come up when we talk about books, so I'm going to skip it and wait for later. We're going to dive in to the Stacks questions.
Okay.
And we always start this way: 2 books you love and mm-hmm. 1 book you hate.
All right. Let's start with the one I hate because I feel like I'm going to get flayed for it.
Okay.
Everyone kept telling me to read this book called All the Light We Cannot See.
Ugh.
I can't get through 150 pages.
You know what? I have it and I'm right there with you. I'm about 90 pages in. I cannot get into it.
Really?
Truly.
You're the first person who's agreed with me.
Well, you found a friend.
I thought you were going to like lambaste me real quick.
My ugh was like, ugh.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm about 100 pages in, I think. Mm-hmm. I just can't do it because
I don't get it.
I'm in one part where this blind girl is like kind of going through the city and she keeps bumping into things. Okay. And then the other one, there's like a dude who's like working on transistor radios in his room. That's what's happening. And I'm like, can I get more, please?
You're like, can I get somewhere? No, I'm fully with you. Here's the thing about books.
And it's won every damn award.
It's won everything. this is the thing about books on this show, is that we're very non-judgmental in a very judgmental way. So you're allowed to have all your negative opinions about things and no one cares, because people have come on here and said they hated On the Road by Jack Kerouac. I talk shit about every book I've ever read. So you don't have to worry that your picks are right or wrong, because someone who's listening agrees with you and someone else who's listening is screaming at their phone or their great. Car. So just feel free.
I was so excited for All the Light We Cannot See, because like I have friends who are like, you have to.
Yeah, my you mother. Have to read it. My mother would not stop. She gave me her copy and it is still here. Hi, Mom. Love you. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do your two that you love.
I love a book called, oh my God, there's so many. This is really
I know,
hard.
It's hard. The two you love today.
I love a book called Court Vision by Ira Burkow. Or Burko? I don't know. He's a columnist for either The New Yorker or The New York Times. And he wrote this book called Court Vision. He takes 41 leaders in their field. Random fields. Everything from like, this book was written, I think, 10, 15 years ago, but he takes like Johnny Cochran.
Okay.
He takes the conductor of the New York Philharmonic. Mm. He takes Sharon Stone. He takes Woody Allen. He takes
controversial.
but he takes like leaders in the field to a Knicks game.
Oh.
And then he sits courtside on the Knicks. And some of these people are like basketball fans lifelong. Okay. Some people have never been to a game in their life.
How
some
cool.
of these people, whatever. And he tries to connect what they're seeing to their field.
Okay.
And then it's sort of like an interview style. So you just go from like person to person to person. So you'll get to like Johnny Cochran and John, and you'll be hearing these, you get to learn about all these different people in their fields and their stories through, sorry, one sort of singular formula. So Johnny Cochran will be like, ah, see the way that they're talking trash and how the trash is actually getting in that dude's head? I actually talk to prosecutors on the way into the courtroom and try to get in their head. So like they're creating similarities. Or Sharon Stone talking about, she goes on this whole like sort of rant about how basketball is sexy and how like the players are like sweating skin on skin and other sports don't have that because other sports are like full uniforms, but in basketball they're like touching and their sweat is touching.
I talk about this all the time
either.
With basketball. Oh yeah. My God, I thought I was the only one. Like when they get up into each other's face, I always say kiss.
Well, it's the only sport where players touch sweat. I mean, wrestling and stuff like that,
sure.
But the other major sports, their uniforms are touching and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'll hear the conductor of the New York Philharmonic being like, oh, like that, he doesn't know anything about basketball. And he's like, oh, that guy is sort of like my drummer. And that guy is sort of like my flute
How
player.
Fucking
and it's
cool.
So amazing to be like, wow, we as humans can create connections or opposites in whatever we want to. And these are geniuses in their fields to watch the best of the best of the best. And sometimes he asks the same questions of all 40 people. And you're like, it's just really great. I love
that's
that book.
Awesome.
So that's Court Vision.
Okay.
And then, God, now I'll do one that's not basketball related. Oh my God, I brought some.
He's going into his bag of books.
I have a bag of books. Okay, there's a book called The Art Spirit by Robert Henri. Was a professor. He was an art professor at a college. And he was so beloved in the community and the school that his students took notes on like his lectures. And then he died, and this is sort of like a group of students came together and like published a book of his like
Whoa.
Notes, and they like categorized it by category. And it's like one of those books you can just like open to a page, read something, and get inspiration. It is so inspirational. If
That's
you are
cool.
a creative person, if you're an artist, if you're a writer, if you're a fashion designer, if you are anything that involves like what you think is creativity, you should get this book immediately. You can probably get it on Amazon for like $5.
Great.
You should get this book immediately, because I can like pick up this book right now, which I'm doing, and I can like open it to a random page. It's just so genius. In various ways, I just open up to a random page, and
it's
this
true.
Is what I read.
I co-sign.
In various ways, the free people of the world will find and translate the beauty that exists for them. The musician, most often in the hidden space of the world. The sculptor, closer to nature. Feeling her forms, needing her inspiration. The poet, from the simple people in remote countries. The painter, it seems to me, mainly from all kinds and conditions of people, from humanity in the making, in the living. Each man must seek for himself the people who hold the essential beauty, and each man must eventually say to himself, as I do, these are my people, and all that I have, I owe to them. There's that on every page.
That's so great. I love that.
I love this book. I have like 4 copies of this book.
Okay, well, we'll just start canning them out to people on the street.
Let me tell you how I found this book.
Okay.
I did Disgraced a lot That play I did. I did it a lot. I did it a lot, a lot, a lot. And when you do a play that much, you get into a sort of rote where, I mean, even while I'm screaming lines, I'm thinking about other things.
Like breakfast.
Breakfast, yeah. And especially, it's weird how it happens, but even like in a scene where I have lines every other four or five lines, I'm like completely doing other things in between those lines. Mm-hmm. And it's only 3 seconds at a time. So there was an incredible set with all these books on the set that they thought that this character would have. And this was one of them. And so I picked it up and started like reading on character in like 10 second breaks on stage. I was like reading and then I would like shout out my line and then we would keep going. And I ended up over the course of like 6 months reading a lot of this book on stage.
That's so cool.
So then I stole it when we, this is the copy that I took off of the Center Theater Group, Los Angeles, Mark Taper Forum. Oh, I stole this from them. So
apologies.
Thank you for that. And the hoodie. I took my character's hoodie as well.
Well, I don't think they listen. And if they do, it's fine. They won't be able to find you.
Yeah.
What are you reading right now?
I'm reading a book called Showboat by Roland Lazenby.
Okay.
It covers sort of like the 1980s Philadelphia. There was a lot of gang violence in 1980s Philadelphia. And this guy named Sonny decided to create basketball leagues for these like different neighborhoods to get their aggression out on each other. And so they did. And so they created the like best of all time basketball league. If you like, legends came from this basketball league. And it's sort of like asked the question is if we didn't have it, what would have happened to these legends? Would they have just been like caught up in gang violence and never played? Or what would have happened? But one of them is Kobe Bryant. And so it's sort of like after you hear all about like the basis of the Philadelphia politics or something called the High Line, I think it's called in Philadelphia or something like that, which is like the wealthy area. And then there's like the other areas and there's like the Jersey areas and there's all that kind of stuff. And they all play. And then it sort of goes off on a tangent, sort of follows the Kobe Bryant narrative because of how impactful he was. So it's a really great book. I'm loving it.
And what are you looking forward to reading?
The next book I'm going to read is called Just Kids by Patti Smith.
Oh, yes. I've heard great things.
I have it. I bought it years ago. I just haven't gone into it. I have so many books that I bought years ago that I haven't started. So that's one of them. I got to like not buy new books so that I can just read the ones I have. I'm also reading this book called If They Come For Us.
Oh,
If They
Come
For Us by Fatima Askar, who's a friend of mine.
Oh, nice. And so does she want to come on the podcast?
I will ask her. Yeah. She's the busiest person.
Send her my email. It's fine.
But I will. Bezad, thanks for always being here for me and for our shared histories. I love you.
Aww.
She's so sweet. It's incredible. It's incredible. And it's a book of poems. And
do you read a lot of poetry?
I don't.
I don't either. I have a hard time with it. I don't know why. I feel like I'm too stupid. Like I think that I project on myself that I'm dumb and I can't get it.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know why I have such a hard time with poetry.
I agree with you. I also don't read poetry, but for some reason
this works for you.
This just really works for me.
Okay. If they come for us, for people like Bezad and I who don't read poetry.
It's not pretentious.
Okay.
It's just not pretentious. Like, can I read a little bit of one?
Sure.
This one's called Partition, Fatima. You're Kashmiri until they burn your home. You're Kashmiri until they take your orchards. You're American until the towers fall, until there's a border on your back. I just like, that's a few lines. It's just like, it's really like, boom. But you're American until the towers fall is so real to me that I'm like, yeah.
Because what are you ethnically?
I'm something called Zoroastrian, which means I'm Middle Eastern. I'm Iranian and Indian.
Okay.
So we're like ethnically Indian. We've been in India for 2,000 years, but our bloodline and our ancestry is all Persian and Iranian.
Okay.
But to everybody else, I'm just a brown Muslim.
Got it. Are you Muslim?
No.
No. What are you? Or are you religious?
Zoroastrian.
Oh,
that is
the religion also.
Yeah,
okay.
It's religion.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Freddie Mercury was a Zoroastrian.
You know, Freddie Mercury was not something that I grew up with as a child. To the point that my mother just went and saw Bohemian Rhapsody and it was over Thanksgiving and I got in the car and she was like, did you know that was a true story?
Oh my God.
And I was like, I actually did, but no thanks to you guys.
Yeah. I don't know how true Bohemian Rhapsody was.
She didn't know that Freddie Mercury was like a person.
A big deal. Yeah.
Like that was a human that existed. Like I'm sure she knew the song,
of course.
I always tell that story and I laugh because I'm like, that's not, people are like, do you want to see it? I'm like, no, it doesn't do it for me.
You're not missing anything.
It's just not for me.
Yeah.
Like I didn't grow up with that, you know.
I grew up with Queen.
Did you?
I loved Queen and that movie couldn't do it for me.
Okay, that's fair. How do you pick a book? Like what to read next?
Oh man. I'm so bad at this because, like I just said, I have so many books I've bought that I have not read yet.
Sure.
Like lots of them, like maybe 100. And I'll go and sometimes it's a book I keep hearing about. There's one called Exit West by...
Yes, that was the first book we did on the show. You should read it. I think you would love it.
How do you say it? Majid?
I've been calling him Mohsen Hamid.
Mohsen Hamid. I think
but
that's
I don't know if that's exactly right.
I think... and so that is because so many of my friends and people I respect are like, you
just
have to read this book.
From this conversation, it'll work for you.
So I haven't started that and I bought it a year ago.
Okay.
Whenever it came out, I bought it. And then there's that. And then sometimes if I like an author, then I'll read another book mm-hmm. by that author. But honestly, I'm just at a bookstore and then I pick something up. Now, mm-hmm. with basketball books, I will say I've read every book about basketball.
You're a huge basketball fan.
Huge basketball fan.
You're a basketball historian.
I am.
You're like a certified. Apparently, you can be a certified basketball historian.
So I on Amazon, I'll just get like an alert if like NBA basketball is a tag in a book. I'll get an alert if I want to buy it. Like I just went to Jackie McMullen's book signing and she's like the best basketball writer. And yeah,
I know who she is. Did you read Shea Serrano's basketball and other things like comic fun book? Totally. I love him.
And that's based on like the True Hoop style of like basketball with illustrations. Yeah.
Well, so you know he has another book called The Rap Yearbook. Do you listen to rap music?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. It's called The Rap Yearbook. It's from 1979 to 2014, and every year he picks the quote unquote most important rap song of the year and then talks about it, but it's in that same style with pictures. It's so fun.
Oh, cool.
I liked it more than basketball and other things because I thought it was really funny and funky, and he'll pick a song and then someone will come on, another writer, and write a little blurb about another song he could have picked or should have picked.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
So it's really fun, and you know, there's drawings and maps and like,
yeah, I love
this song's about like gangsters, or this song's about drugs, and it's really fun. Well, what's the last book that someone recommended to you that they just like nailed it, that you just loved?
Okay, this is a lame answer, but I'm gonna be honest.
Go ahead.
Game of Thrones.
Okay.
I didn't watch the show and I didn't read the books, and one of my best friends, Hillary Williams, was like, I'm telling you, basically, I'm like, no, I don't like dragons. No, I don't like it. I don't want dragons. No, I don't want fire. I don't want it. And she's like, can you just read book one? 1,000 pages. So I was like, ugh. So I read book one. I mean, 300 pages in. I was like, you're absolutely right. I'm so sorry. You're 100% right. I hadn't watched any of the show yet. So I read book one, like 500 pages into book one. I buy the volume set, book 1 through 5.
Okay.
So I was like, now I have 1 through 5. And I read all 5 and like, very quickly. That's 6,000 pages.
And have you watched the shows now?
Now I've watched the shows and I'm caught up and I can't wait.
I've not done any of it.
It's just...
I'm just like so not something that I think that I would be into. / I don't want to get into it because it's too much of my time.
Yeah. And again, we've met today, but I will say that like you think you won't get into it.
No. Well, part of me is like, I don't think I'll like it. And then the other part of me is like, what if I like it? And then my whole life becomes this for like 6 months. And all I do is watch Game of Thrones. Like, ugh, what a waste of my time.
So I was always against the e-readers because I like real books, but I didn't want to carry around 1,000-page books. And I was living in Chicago at the time. And I was like on the train, just like going back and forth. And I was like, I'm not carrying around these 1,000-page books, especially because if I finish book one, I got to go right into book two. I don't want to carry 2,000-page books. So I got an e-reader just for Game of Thrones. And there's something that happens. I'm not going to spoil it, but everybody who's read it will know what I'm talking about. Like halfway through book three, that is like the big event.
Is it the Red Wedding?
It is.
I know all about this.
And I hadn't watched the show, and I'm just reading this book. And I'm on the train. I threw a piece of electronics on the train in Chicago. I didn't even want to or mean to. Like, it's what happened. That's like, my body threw it. My body was like, no. And it threw it. And I couldn't. It's unreal. It's just so good. I'm going to make a bold statement here.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's the best writing, and I'm not saying it's the best writer.
Okay.
But I'm saying it is one of the greatest stories ever told. I'm not talking about the quality of the writing.
Sure. You're saying the story.
The story. The plot is incredible.
You're talking my language. I love plot. This sounds like a thing. Well, let me just ask you about your e-reader since you brought it up.
Yeah.
Have you read anything on it since?
Well, yeah, because now I have it.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Yeah. I'm very anti-e-reader. I don't have one. I'm scared to get one because I don't want to like it.
Yeah.
But I did read an 1,100-page book and I carried it around with me, and I had a wrist injury, which is very nerdy because in my other life I teach fitness, and there's something like wearing a wrist brace when you're teaching a spin class and people being like, are you okay? And me saying, yeah, I heard it reading a book.
Yeah.
Like super nerd. What's the last, what's a book that you like to recommend to people?
Sacred Hoops.
Okay. Talk about
it. By Phil Jackson. Sacred Hoops is not long. It's a quick read. It's about, what is the tagline? He calls it Spiritual Lessons of a Hardwood Warrior.
Oh, so dramatic.
It's about mindfulness and compassion and leadership and sacrifice.
And he was the coach of the Bulls and the Lakers. If you don't know what Phil Jackson is.
He also won 2 championships as a player in 72-73 for the Knicks.
Just a few of the most storied franchises.
He was raised in North Dakota in the Lakota Sioux tribe, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And so he takes those lessons into his players. And one of the reasons why Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Shaq got so sort of heady in their nerdship about basketball is through Phil Jackson and like the meditation and the visualizations. And you learn, you do not have to be a basketball fan. My father and mother, I recommended this book to. I mean, you just have to be a person who is interested in how leadership qualities. I use lessons from Sacred Hoops all the time.
I love that. Are there things about your reading besides buying books that you have no intention to read right away that you wish were different?
Yeah, I wish I read more. Sure. So moving to LA has hurt my reading a lot.
This is what happened to me. Because there's no train.
There's no train.
And that's a huge reading.
You are speaking my mind.
New York, Chicago people.
Yeah.
Y'all on those trains, DC people.
Yeah.
Just imagine if you didn't have that. I read
50 books a year because I was reading a book a week on a train. And I live about an hour from where I worked. And then I would go to the theater, which is the Goodman downtown. That's another 45 minutes. So I'm talking an hour there, 45 minutes to the theater, 45 minutes home. Every day with a book. Every day with a book. Every single day.
Sure.
That's a lot of reading.
Yeah.
Now I'm driving.
Ebooks? Do you ever do it?
Listen? No. Oh, you mean like
audiobooks? Sorry. I said ebooks. I meant audiobooks.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, let me tell you one quick thing since we're here. Our sponsor is Audible. And if you've never done Audible, you get your first 30 days for free and a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. So that's what I'll tell you. But what I'll also tell you is that if you like to read books that are memoir or nonfiction type things, which it sounds like sometimes you do, I find those to be the best on an audiobook and kind of nice for a drive. You said that you do work with Black Lives Matter, and I'm actually listening to When They Call You a Terrorist by Patrice Kahn Colors, and that's her memoir. Mm-hmm. And she reads it, and it is phenomenal. I'm like 60% through, and I was like moved to almost tears, except for that I was driving. So I was like, breathe.
Yeah.
So I'm not wild about audiobooks, but I had to figure out a way to get more reading in my life.
Totally.
And so that's what I did moving here. So you're interested.
Moving to LA, my reading dropped a lot. Like one of my New Year's resolutions will be to read more. And I got to just carve out time before bed to do it because otherwise it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And also I'm reading so many like scripts constantly and I'm reading so many plays constantly.
People don't realize how much actors read.
Oh my God.
You don't
so
think
much.
It's just not something that you think that actors do, but they do read a ton. I mean, and a lot of it's crap.
Yeah. During pilot season, you know, I'll get 3 or 4 auditions a week. I'm going to read 3 or 4 scripts.
Right.
A script might be between 40 to 70 to 80 to 120 pages. I'm reading all 4 of them that week so I can audition.
Right. So that's it's a lot.
That's a lot. And then when you do that, then I don't want to read at night.
Right.
So then I don't. And so sometimes I will say LA has killed my reading habit. Chicago just encouraged it on the train. Sure. I was reading so much on the train.
So much.
Missing stops and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. No, it's true. I kind of how this podcast came to be long range was that when I moved to LA, I wasn't reading as much. And so I set a reading goal for myself for 2016. And I said, I'm going to read 12 books this year. That's it. I'm going to keep it really simple, one a month. And I finished like December 30th. And I was so proud of myself. So I said, okay, 2017, I'm going to read 13 books. I ended up reading 24.
Whoa.
And like, because I just like hit my stride. I finally figured out how to get it back in my life. But for me to hit the goal, it was important that I gave myself a very specific goal. So not just like read more, but like this many books.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't super strict. Like if a book that I started in January, I finished in February, that was okay. As long as I finished 12 books by the end of the, so like I wasn't crazy.
Yeah. You can do 2 in June.
But people are always like, well, how do you, and I'm like, you just have to set like a really specific goal, just like I guess everything else. Mm-hmm. If you want to make actual change, you have to set a goal that's specific and something that is attainable. Because I think like a lot of it is like if you set crazy goals and you don't achieve it and it's your hobby, it's kind of like this isn't fun. Like, mm-hmm. you don't want to feel bad about it. So I tend to go low on goals for hobbies and higher on goals, like, professionally.
That's cool.
I just think, like, it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
That's me. Do you have genres besides basketball books that you love or genres that you don't love?
I won't read horror.
Okay.
Messes me up. Can't sleep, especially because I read before bed.
Sure.
Can't do it.
Nightmares.
So I'm not reading horror. It's so funny. I would literally say I also hate fantasy, but I just plugged Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones very hard, so you can't say that.
But I don't consider it
sure,
fantasy.
It's fine. You don't like fantasy, but you'll read anything that's great. If it's like a great fantasy book, then it's a great book.
But like, I don't want to read like anything that's in space.
Sure.
With like aliens and stuff. I don't want to read
that. But if it was really great, you probably would like it.
Yeah, probably, I guess.
But you might buy it and just leave it on your shelf.
Like Game of Thrones, when I finally listened because my friend, I literally did that because she was my friend. Mm-hmm. When I finally read it, I was like, oh, this isn't fantasy. The dragons represent something. Like, this is the War of the Roses. This is the War of 1812. Sure. This is history. Sure. This is awesome. This is allegory.
I love it.
I love it. Like, the Dothraki people are like the Turkish, the Ottoman Empire coming in. Like,
whoa.
I can see it.
You're feeling it.
I am.
You felt it on like levels.
I am.
Is what you're telling
like
us.
They're the people of the earth. They're the people of the sand. They're called savages, but really they're like way more advanced. Oh. Then there's like the white people in Europe, which they call Westeros. But like, you know what I mean? It's like,
I see.
It's dope.
Okay, you're really plugging this.
Sometimes though, he does like 3 pages describing food.
There's nothing I hate more than long descriptions of things I already know. Like, I know what a rose is. You don't need to do it.
No, but he'll be like, and then the turkey with the thing, and then the mead. And it's like old food too. So it's like not even food that I'm aware of.
You're
like pigeon breast. And I'm like, okay.
We got it. It's
cool.
A bird.
Can we go?
Does it taste like chicken? Let's keep on moving. All right. What's the last book that made you cry?
It's a book called Contested Will, and it's by James Shapiro. And it's about who actually wrote Shakespeare, if it wasn't Shakespeare.
Ooh.
But it goes on like a little narrative adventure.
I don't want to know if it's not him. I need it to be him for some reason.
Yeah, but like, this book offers so many theories. Like, what if it's not even like...
If it's a black woman, then I'm down. Otherwise, like...
It definitely wasn't a black woman.
Right. So like, it's fine. Like, I've resigned my mind that like some white guy wrote it. So like, unless you're going to tell me like it was... you know, a woman or
what if
like,
I told you it is like there's possibilities that it was like a collection of people and that Shakespeare wasn't a real person.
No, that's boring to me.
What if I told you that it was actually this like really high level like Duke but since Shakespeare's work came at the king so much, he had to like pretend to be some peasant.
But I don't know, because I don't know who that is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I hear you.
I like that it's Shakespeare. This is one of those conspiracy theories that I'm like, I don't have time for this. Like, I could talk to you about JFK conspiracies all day,
me too. Yeah.
But like William Shakespeare's conspiracies.
So
like,
there's like,
leave me alone.
There's a lot of books that like kind of go at the facts, but this book kind of takes you on a narrative.
Okay.
And it's really fun.
But it made you cry.
And it made me cry because it talks about the importance of it without it mattering who wrote it. And like, Shakespeare was born with a birth certificate in Latin. He died with a death certificate in English. He is like primarily responsible for English becoming the popular language because like English was the language of the dumb, of like Latin was the language of the educated.
Mm.
And he made English the cool language. Like, he made English the thing. And like, 1/5 of the words we have today are coming from Shakespeare.
Right.
And that's before we had words that he couldn't even have invented, like computer and internet and things like that, that like he didn't even, or air conditioning. Like, those aren't even things that like he could have invented. And still, so I don't know. I just was moved by it.
I like that. What's the last book that made you angry?
Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine. If you don't want to throw your book across the room at how messed up everybody is.
It made you angry because of the content, or it made you angry because of her? Like,
No. She's great.
Oh, okay.
She just like points out things that happen, and you're like, so the shock doctrine is a principle that is that when there is bad things happening, whether it's a natural disaster or a war or whatever, there are a group of capitalists who will come and take advantage of that and make millions and millions or billions and billions or trillions and trillions of dollars off of people's trauma. And then so she goes through like 8 or 9 examples of it and just like really dives in. Mm. And the first one is like Hurricane Katrina.
I think I've read this book.
Oh my God.
Did it come out like maybe like 2000, like 10-ish, 11? You don't
know.
No
idea.
I think I read this in New York.
I just was like, and then it's like Hurricane Katrina. And then, oh, this group comes in and puts a bunch of charter schools in there and that guy makes $1 billion. And then it's like, oh, this hurricane. So now we're going to charge $18 for a bottle of water and $64 for a gallon of gas. Like just people who do that stuff. And then you hear about people that actually create problems for financial gain. It's called the shock doctrine. And it's just, like, you feel so helpless and angry.
Ugh. What's a book where you felt like you learned a lot?
I read a book called, I think it's called Things You Should Learn and High school things I didn't learn in
things
school.
That your teach things my things teacher never taught
yeah.
me.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, there's also a book. There's a guy who does. He's the guy who wrote Living Biblically, but he wrote another book about A to Z. He reads the whole encyclopedia. What's this guy's name?
AJ Jacobs.
That's exactly
author.
Right. That's exactly okay. right. And he has a book about where he. So he basically does this thing. This is the book where I learned a lot.
Okay.
He decides that he is going to read the entire encyclopedia from A to Z in a year.
The know-it-all?
Yes. And what he'll do is he actually talks in the book. He does two things. He has two things at the same time. If he like reads a really cool thing and like the letter C, then like he'll put it there. He'll be like, I don't know. He'll be like, Chihuahua. And then like he'll... So you like learn about that cool thing that he learned about. And you're like, oh, cool. I just learned about a chihuahua. And then like for letter D, it's something else, right? But then he also talks about what this process is doing to his life.
Hmm.
And like it threatens his marriage. Because like to read the entire encyclopedia is a lot in a year. It's a lot. And he also has a job and he has like a family. And his wife is like, stop doing this stupid thing. And it's a really good book. But you learn a lot because they'll... They'd be like, isn't this fascinating about
chihuahuas?
Whatever, whatever it is.
I love little factoids. Yeah. It's always fun.
You'd like that book, though.
I'm always the person who's like, oh, did you know? People are like, you're annoying. You didn't know that. Where did you read that? I'm like, it doesn't matter. I did learn it. What's the last book you read what's a book that you're proud to have read?
A book that I am proud to have read. I read Anagoche.
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Yes.
Which one? Americana.
Oh, yes.
So good.
To Between the World and Me, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
We did that on the show too.
I'm really happy that I read that. Really Love proud that book. I read that. More importantly, I'm really proud that I read his Atlantic article, The Case for Reparations.
Oh, so good. Did you get his We Were 8 Years in Power?
No.
That book? It's one article of his for each year of the Obama administration.
Right.
Technically, it's not quite. Technically, it starts in 2007, I believe. Or something. It's, you know, anyways. But, and it follows his career. So, like, the case reparations is in there as one. But at the beginning of each year, he talks about himself, where he was in his life and in his writing career. And it's really interesting because there's a point, I think maybe it's before the case reparations, or maybe it is that one, where he talks about how he's finally proud of like where, or like he's finally pleased with where he is as a writer. And it's really cool to read his work. Like, it's cool to read his work chronologically and hear him talk about it. He writes something about Bill Cosby and he's like, I wish I could take that back. Like, I wish that I had talked about these other things about Bill Cosby besides just the pound cake speech. I wish that I had been critical of his relationship with women and the, like, and it's just really, and then you read the article and you're like, yo, this guy's a genius still. Like, I think he's one of our greats.
Of course he
for
is.
Sure.
He's absolutely one of our great thinkers. Absolutely.
He's just so smart.
I really agree with that.
You should check it out. You don't have to read it all at once, but it's cool to see his growth as a writer.
Yeah. And by the way, throwback, you said, what book do I recommend to people? Between the World and Me, I recommend a lot, especially to a certain kind of person.
Yeah. So Heavy is a book by Kiese Layman, who's also a great American thinker. He's a black man from Mississippi, and that's his memoir. It just came out, and I read it in like so quick. It's amazing, and it is what I like to call Coatesian because it is Ta-Nehisi Coates in the sense that it's talking about race in America, but it's much more personal than Between the World and Me. Like, he's talking about his weight, addiction, mm-hmm. like all sorts of stuff that are, it's much more personal, but he is painting this bigger picture about America and the American South and what it means to be black and what it means to be overweight. And what, and he talks about his mom a lot. So it also incorporates a feminist angle, okay. which is, it's really great, but it is very Coatesian. So if that's something that you like, I suggest. I'm great. Just making you buy a bunch of new books.
I know. Thank you. I have 14 to read at home still, but okay.
How about this? What's a book that you've read that you're embarrassed about?
Okay. So my obsession with basketball books is going deep.
Okay.
Like really deep.
Okay.
And so there was one book and it's called Foul Lines.
Okay.
It is so bad.
Okay.
I mean, it's like... It's high school basketball phenom.
Oh, it's fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And then, and like all the names are just like slightly different from like Stephon Marbury is like, it's like Steve Starbury or something like that. You
okay.
know what I mean? And
okay,
you're like, okay.
okay.
And then like, of course, the women come, the gold diggers, then right. the agents.
Got it.
Oh, man. It's so bad. I mean, like page two.
It's like
I was
after
like,
school specially.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
and
God,
I was like,
I love
oh,
it.
This is bad. And then he's like, and he's just thinking, well, who do I trust? I can't trust these people because they're only in it for the money. And these people are only in it for the fame. I'm just in it for the game.
Oh, my God. I'm dying.
And I was like, oh, why am I reading this? But oh I could. I was like, well, I have to know what happens.
I have to know what happens to Steve Starbury.
Yeah, or whatever. Oh, it's so, I hope this person's not listening, but
it's
man,
okay.
it's bad.
They know.
Foul lines.
They know. What about a book that you've never read, that you're embarrassed that you've never read?
Oh, there's so many of those.
I know.
Oh, give them to me. Pride and Prejudice, haven't
sure.
read it.
I'm not. I have read that, and I'm not embarrassed, and that is on my do not like.
Anna Karenina, haven't
sure.
read it.
The Russians, I'm a non, yeah. I'm a Russian non-Russian reader.
Umberto Eco's A Stranger, haven't read it.
Sure.
Like, just give them to me. I haven't
yeah.
read them.
Okay, perfect.
And then you know what? Same thing with those movies. I haven't watched them.
Oh, I've
won't
never
watch
seen
Citizen
any of
Kane,
them.
Won't watch Casablanca.
I have seen that.
Don't care. Don't
I've never
watch
seen
it.
A Godfather. I've never seen
That's
a
crazy.
Jaws. I've never seen an E.T. I've never seen a Star
Damn.
Wars. I've never,
Damn.
I've never seen.
You don't like Spielberg at all.
Is he Titanic? No,
no, that's James Cameron.
I've seen James Cameron's films. I've seen Schindler's List.
Okay, the black and white one. All right, Janusz Kaminski did the cinematographer, by the way, Columbia College, Chicago.
Okay, well, I've seen some Spielberg. I don't know what else I've seen, but basically,
not Jaws, not
I've not
E.T.
seen.
He produced Star
I've
Wars
not
with
seen,
Lucas.
Like any movie that is on the list of movies that everyone's seen,
yeah.
which was particularly hard in theater school.
Yeah, well, all the black and white ones from the 40s, 50s, 60s,
sure.
70s, I'm
nice.
Out.
Like, I've seen Gone with the Wind. Wait, that's like my favorite movie. I'll give you here. Anyone who's curious about my favorite films, Gone with the Wind, A League of Their Own, Jerry Maguire. That's it. That's the list.
So did you know that there is a documentary coming out about the real women from A League of Their Own?
Do you know that I met the real women of A League of Their Own during like the 1996, whatever year the All-Star Game was in Seattle.
Wow.
My dad's best friend was a former, he played for the A's. He won World Series there, Bill North. But he lives in Seattle and we got to go and I got to meet like the real women. And
that's amazing.
I was like, are you Dottie Henson? And she's like, okay, no. Like that's a character. But I was like 10 and I thought it was so great.
Yeah.
But I will watch. I mean.
They're making a documentary because there was a lot of like, they were lesbians. And
sure.
And
they
didn't really touch on that much in the movie. They sort of like. They kind of like allude a little tiny bit.
I don't even know. I would never even have thought of that, but of course they are.
And so this documentary is going to like touch on
oh my God,
that part
wait.
Of it and how the movie was like, oh, they're women. No one watches it. But there was also a lot of, oh, but they're lesbians. And that's like,
sure.
that's Satan work.
Right. Well, and that film is chronically underrated in sports
sure.
movies. Like everyone talks about Rudy, whatever.
Rudy's
Bye.
Trash.
Rudy is so
We could
bad.
Talk sports movies for a long time.
I love sports movies, but A League of Their Own is top five sports movies. And I don't care what you say.
He Got Game. This is the best sports movie of all time.
I have not seen that in so long that it's possible that I can't even talk about it. I know that I've seen scenes from it. Maybe you haven't even seen the whole thing. This is what we call a very important movie tangent. I like don't even remember where we are on the questions. Let's see. Are there any books for you
mm-hmm.
that stood out for you by or about actors and acting that you feel like are really great books?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of books on acting
yeah,
and
a lot
of them are garbage.
There's one called Approaches on Acting
okay.
that I really loved. John Jory has a book called Tips. He He also has a book called Tips 2, which is great. I'm hesitant to recommend this, but I'll be honest. I loved this book and it did a lot for my work as an actor, mm-hmm. but I think the author is trash as a human.
Is it Woody Allen?
No, it's David Mamet.
Okay, same difference.
It's a book called True and False.
Okay.
And I think it's brilliant. And I think a lot of brilliant people are trash.
Okay.
So I'm not like plugging David Mamet, but I will plug True and False, the book. There's also a book by Anna Deavere Smith. I think it's called Letters to a Young Artist.
Okay.
Really great.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot of great books on. And then this Robert Henri, The Art Spirit.
Right.
That's not about acting, but it'll help.
Sure. The craft. Yeah. Okay, I have two more questions for you. I'm going to try to keep it just to two. I always end up adding another one, but I'm going to do two. If you were a high school teacher, what's a book that you would recommend to your class?
Night.
By Eli Wiesel?
Yeah.
We read that in high school, actually.
Me too.
It's a good one. So you would just take someone else's recommendation.
Oh, you're saying like, okay.
Like I was saying like if you, I mean, that's a good one, but I feel like high school kids do read that.
No, you're right. I hear what you're saying now. High school teacher, what I want my kids. This is a really good question.
Thank you. I wrote it myself.
The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon.
Okay. I've not read that, but I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Okay. This will be your last one. I stole this one from the New York Times book review, or by the book, whatever it's called. If you could make the current president of the United States read one book, what would it be?
The Bible? No. I don't know that he's capable of like understanding anything. So I don't know that he would get what I'm trying to get at. But honestly, like one of those Shakespeare's, kingdom Shakespeare's, I'd love for him to read Richard III.
I think he is Richard III.
Of course, I'd love for him to read Richard III, but I don't think he's capable of being like, oh my God. Or like something like The Art of War, like something where just to make him realize what a egomaniac he is, or like what an ignorant, like sort of fool he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think you can get at a 72-year-old man's compassion.
No.
I think it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Too late for you.
Yeah.
So I think the only way to bring down the braggadociousness of a 72-year-old man is embarrassment.
Mm.
And I think if you can watch, like, if he can watch what happens to Richard III, he might go, shit, this might happen to me.
I might need a horse and not have one. What a nightmare.
Or, no, this is stupid. I was going to say Game of Thrones. I was like, read it, dude. Watch
he's
what
not getting through that.
No, because he's going to think that he's the noble one.
Oh, he's not.
No.
He could be Lear also, but
yeah.
Lear has a weird twist that is...
Lear has a little bit of compassion and a little humanity that I don't think Trump has.
No.
Also, Lear's like incredibly intelligent in a way that Trump is not.
Right. But Richard III is really fucking smart.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Who's as dumb as him?
That's the thing. That isn't a thing that Shakespeare was writing about. I don't think he could have conceived of such a thing because fame in that way wasn't there. Like this like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because everything was smaller, closer, more localized. So this like huge, you know, I don't think that exists. And like because all his fools are smart. There's dumb people, but it's in a different way. Like they're beautiful and dumb.
Is there a book that dumb people can really get enraptured in? Because then maybe everybody else can like do stuff while he's reading.
There's a book that everyone can get really enraptured in. It's called 50 Shades of Grey. It's
amazing.
It's called The Hunger Games. Also fantastic.
I don't think he could read about a female protagonist in both those books you just mentioned.
Damn,
have that.
Right. Okay. This is hard. This is like, you're like having to cross it off. You have like 100 books. You just keep going through why these don't work.
I read all three of the Suzanne Collins Hunger Games books, by the way.
Of course. How could you not? They're
ordered
so good.
Ordered them online. Like, ooh, these are great.
I read them over Thanksgiving one year and it was the greatest. Okay. So you're coming back next week. We're going to talk about Open City by Teju Cole. Do you want to do like a little like... just a little tease. What did you think of the book?
I liked it a lot.
Okay.
I really liked it.
Ooh, he liked it. Okay. So we'll be back next week. Bayzad, thank you so much for being here. And everybody else, we'll see you in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to our guest, Bayzad Dabu. Bayzad will be back next week to talk about Open City by Teju Cole for the Stacks Book Club. To join the Stacks Pack and to get inside access to this show, like perks and our virtual book club and a lot more, go to patreon.com/thestacks. Thank you to our sponsors, My Mentor Book Club and Audible. For 50% off your first box of 2 nonfiction, new released hardcover books, go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. And if you want to get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook download, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. I want to give a special thank you to Carlos Shane Clark. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.